February 18th, Saturday of the sixth week in ordinary time. We live in a celebrity culture. Those who are rewarded with money, power, and fame are often not those who contribute the most or who live by the highest standards, but those who are most effective at self-promotion. The means used can involve physical image and dress, attention-grabbing stunts, intentional controversies, attacks on others, various ingratiating acts, misinformation, and clever manipulation of social and broadcast media. We see that frequently in politics, where the one elected to an office is not the one most qualified to do the job, but the one who has been able to craft and publicize an identity that is most visible and attractive to voters. Whether the identity is true or not is beside the point. It is all about name recognition. We see the same phenomenon in business, where the celebrity CEO is the one who gets the most notice and the best opportunities and funding. In entertainment, where image often trumps talent, and even in sports, which is supposed to be all about performance, but where the most flamboyant competitors grab more credit and bigger contracts than the quiet, selfless team players. The extreme case is the so-called influencers, who have never actually done anything, but have managed to create a personal brand on TikTok or YouTube and gain a big following, which they then leverage into lucrative promotional deals. Jesus, on the other hand, was not a self-promoter. The Gospel of Mark is filled with instances where Jesus admonishes those he has healed not to talk about it. And he often went to some lengths to get away from the adoring crowds. He was all about promoting God and God's kingdom, which was entering the world and taking shape through Jesus. His insistence that God and God alone should reign in our lives, and his challenge to those who were only concerned about protecting their own interests, alienated the religious and secular powers who attacked him. Ultimately, even the crowd turned on him, which led even his closest disciples to waver. Jesus was definitely not courting anyone's favor, except the Father's. That's the context for Mark's account of the Transfiguration in today's Gospel. It's important to note that this passage is bracketed by two of Jesus' predictions of his rejection, suffering, and death, leading to his resurrection. On the mountaintop, the disciples get a foretaste of what is ahead. Jesus appears in glory, speaking with Moses and Elijah, the two Old Testament figures that were most zealous in following God and speaking God's truth, challenging kings and confronting the infidelity of their own people, enduring constant persecution and rejection as a result. The voice of the Father identifying Jesus as the Beloved One shows that the glory they see comes from the Father and is tied to Jesus' total devotion to God's will, even to the point of sacrifice and death. It is only by surrendering totally to the Father's will that Jesus finds true and lasting glory, not the shallow, transitory popularity that we so often chase. This was a lesson the disciples would ultimately learn and live out in their own lives, although it took a lot of time and patience and a good dose of the Holy Spirit. It's a lesson we too need to learn. Because it is so countercultural, it demands our special attention. Our lives have real significance and power to the extent that we put aside all our striving to impress others and put all our attention and efforts into knowing and following God's will. When we do that, God will shine in us and with a light more brilliant than anything we could produce ourselves. I experienced one extraordinary example of this almost 50 years ago when I was a Jesuit novice working as an aide in our province infirmary outside of Boston. I helped take care of an older Jesuit who was there recovering from a heart attack. He was a quiet, humble, gracious man, really just a simple guy from rural Pennsylvania named Walter Chizik. The name meant nothing to me until another Jesuit who was going blind had me read to him from the book With God in Russia. There I found the amazing story of how Father Chizik had volunteered to go undercover into Poland and Russia to minister as a priest to the people there, had been betrayed and captured, and had spent 20 years in the Russian gulag, enduring unimaginable isolation, hardship, and torture. Yet he always held to his faith and continued to minister in whatever way he could to those around him, before finally being returned home in a prisoner swap. When I asked him about his experiences, he treated it as if it was no big deal. To him, all that mattered was God. As he wrote in a subsequent book, He Leadeth Me, quote, "Across that threshold I had been afraid to cross, things suddenly seemed so very simple. There was but a single vision, God, who was all in all. There was but one will that directed all things, God's will. Nothing could separate me from him because he was in all things. No danger could threaten me, no fear could shake me, except the fear of losing sight of him." End quote. Father Chizik's total lack of self-importance and his steadfast strength and devotion spoke more loudly than any praise he or anyone else could have given for his extraordinary life and deeds. Now his life shines brightly as a powerful inspiration to many and a model for us all.